You've got a cord of steel. Eve took a shaky breath. I'm sorry I deceived you. Ran out when you were sleeping and went back to Lille when you didn't want me to return. Her voice was thick. I'm so sorry.
I know.
Eve looked down at the table where his hand lay next to her maimed one. He shifted a little so that his thumb grazed the tip of her nearest finger. I wish... Eve began and stopped. Wished what? That he wasn't married? Eve was too much of a mess to step into the place at his side, even if that place was empty. That they could find a bed and curl up together anyway. Eve couldn't bear to share a room with anyone. The nightmares were too bad. That they could go back a few years. To before. Before what? Zygborg? Lily? The war? I wish you were happy, she said at last. Cameron didn't lift her hand to his lips in the old gesture. He lowered his head to the tabletop instead, and pressed his worn mouth to her abused knuckles.
I'm a broken-down army officer, with a lot of dead recruits on my hands, Eve. I don't have it in me to be happy.
You could resign from the army.
I can't, really. Because as many dead as I've got behind me, there are more in front, waiting in Ireland to be trained. And I know I'll do better by them than arses like Allenton.
He was more than halfway drunk, Eve realized. He'd never insulted a superior aloud before.
I'm still useful, Cameron said, pronouncing his words carefully. I can go to Ireland and train up the next generation of cannon fodder, so that's what I'll do. I'll go on working until I can't anymore. Then I suppose I'll die.
Or retire.
Retirement kills people like us, Eve. That's how we die if the bullets don't get there first.
He smiled bitterly.
Bullets, boredom, or brandy. That's how people like us go. Because God knows we aren't made for peace.
No, we aren't. Eve leaned down and pressed her own lips against his hand. And then they drank until it was time for Cameron's train. He held his liquor like an Englishman, glassy-eyed but still ramrod straight as they headed up the pier.
I go to Ireland in a week.
His voice was as bleak as if he were going to hell.
Where are you going?
Back to France, as soon as possible.
What's in France?
An enemy. Eve looked up, brushing the dry wisps of hair out of her eyes, feeling the weight of the pistol in her satchel.
René Bordelon, Cameron. I'm going to kill him if it's the last thing I do in this life.
That was Eve's use, now that the war was done. Cameron's eyes puzzled her, a study in agony and indecision. Later, Eve would go over that look very carefully and realize just how well he'd pulled the wool over her eyes.
Eve, he said at last. Didn't you know? René Bordelon is dead.
Chapter 37. Charlie. June 1947. I braced myself the next day for Eve's sarcasm, because absolutely no one could have looked at Finn and me and not known exactly what had happened. Both of us were heavy-eyed from lack of sleep. I couldn't keep a smile off my face, and Finn cast so many sideways glances at me, I was surprised he didn't tip the car in a ditch before we even got out of Grenoble. But Eve was silent from the moment she climbed into the Lagonda. When I looked back at her, she was gazing off over the hills. And I liked that better than having her make trenchant comments about the way Finn and I covertly held hands in the front seat.
What happens when we get to Kaas? I tried asking her.
An enigmatic smile.
I groaned. You are so infuriating, you know that?
But I couldn't stay cross. Finn's fingers twined through mine were rough and warm, and I was so happy it nearly stunned me. I'd felt nothing but numbness for so long. And then felt the numbness shattered by grief and guilt and anger. Those things were still there, but they were overlaid now by this rich, quiet glow. It wasn't just the sleepless night we'd shared. It was the way Finn had gone downstairs for coffee while I sat combing my hair. And come back with not just coffee, but a plate of crisp bacon, charmed out of the hotel cook. All because he knew I was craving it. It was the way I'd looked at myself in the mirror and seen not the angry girl setting her chin at an angle that told the world I don't care, but a happy young woman with a French tan and a scatter of freckles. It was the face of someone who did care, and was cared for in return. I shook my head slightly to disrupt my own thoughts. I didn't want to examine the happiness too closely. I was too afraid it would fall apart. I was content to let it be, never releasing Finn's hand, but turning around in my seat again as we drew nearer class, and having another go at Eve. Let's have it. How are we going to find Bordelon?
I'm still turning my plan over for weak points, Yank, she replied. I know perfectly well I'm not entirely level on the subject of René.
You mean not entirely seen, Finn muttered.
I heard that, Scotsman.
She didn't sound angry.
I'm not all there, and we all know it, so I'm making sure this plan hasn't got holes, because this could easily get cocked up, and I have no intention of letting that happen.
How can I help with this plan of yours? I asked. But Finn muttered something as Eve began to answer. What is it?
That oil leak.
He dropped my hand, pointing at a dial.
Need to tighten a few things.
We're only an hour from Glass. I gave the convertible's dashboard a thump. This old bucket.
What's your tone, miss? She's an old lady, and she deserves a rest if she wants one.
This car is not actually alive, Finn.
Says you, lass.
Finn eased the car off onto one of the side roads as we bickered. Who knew bickering could be so enjoyable? Green hills rose in the distance on all sides, and the air had some heady fragrance I didn't recognize. Not far south was the sea, I thought. The lazy influence of the Mediterranean was rising fast in the air. Then I gave a breathless, oh, as the Lagonda finished the turn on the off-road and coasted to a stop. For a moment, all three of us stared. The slope below was a dazzling carpet of blue-purple spires, and the smell rose into the wind, intoxicatingly sweet. Hyacinths. Thousands upon thousands of hyacinths. I leaned so far over the door I nearly fell out, inhaling deeply. We must have driven onto one of the flower farms. Grasse was a capital for perfume makers. I already knew that. But I'd never seen the local flower fields that supplied the trade. I scrambled out of the car, leaving the door gaping, and leaned down to bury my nose in the nearest bank of blooms. The scent dizzied me. Farther down the slope I could see swells of pink, rolling masses of roses. From even farther came the rich waft of jasmine. I looked back and saw Eve sitting very still, breathing in the scents. Saw Finn smiling as he fetched his toolbox. I couldn't resist plunging into the waves of blue, running my fingertips along the spires. It was like wading into a fragrant sapphire lake. Finn was closing the hood by the time I came running back. Eve, I called, and leaning over I deposited an armload of hyacinths into her lap. For you! Eve looked at the mass of flowers, her tortured hands moving gently through the soft petals, and I felt my eyes prickle. You testy, stubborn, goddamn old bat, I do love you, I thought. She looked up at me, smiling a rather rusty smile, and I wondered if she was about to say something similarly affectionate.
Here's the plan once we get to Grasse, she said instead.
I laughed. I should have known better than to expect a sentimental moment from Eve. Finn came up beside me, and she nodded at him.
You'll need a sharp suit, Scotsman, and some business cards. You, Yank, will need to play my devoted granddaughter. And we'll all need patience, because this is going to take time.
She outlined the rest in a few sentences. The two of us listened, nodding.
Could work, Finn said. If Bordelon is in Grasse to begin with.
And if we find him? I asked. Eve smiled, blandly.
Why do you ask?
Humor me. I was thinking of the conversation on the bridge last night. My gnawing fear that Eve wanted blood. I was not going to be a party to a murder. What are you going to do when you find him?
Eve quoted in French.
I shall come back to your bedroom and silently glide toward you with the shadows of the night. I shall give you kisses frigid as the moon and the caresses of a serpent that slithers around a grave. I groaned.
Let me guess, Baudelaire. My favorite poem. Le Revenant. The ghost. But it sounds better in French. Revenant comes from the verb revenir.
To come back.
He never thought I'd come back. He's going to be very wrong.
Finn and I exchanged glances, and Eve turned brisk again.
Back in the car, children. We can't gawp at the flowers all day.
We motored into Grasse at twilight, a place of square towers, narrow, twisting roads, apricot roofs, and Mediterranean colors. And over everything, the scent of the flower fields. Eve strode up to the hotel clerk and opened her mouth, but I forestalled her.
Two rooms, I said, looking up at Finn. One for grand-maman and one for us. Don't you think, dear?
I said it without a hitch, laying a casual hand on his arm, so the clerk would see my wedding ring. As Eve had said, selling a story is done by reciting the little details without any flubs.
Two rooms, Finn confirmed, slightly strangled.
The clerk didn't bat an eye. Later, I put a telephone call to Violette in Roubaix, letting her know where to reach me. We were in Grasse, and the hunt was on. Finn's new cards were embossed and expensive-looking.
Pass them over with a patronizing air, Eve instructed. And for God's sake, will you two quit giggling?
But Finn and I went on howling with laughter. The cards, in their impressive-looking script, read, Donald McGowan, Solicitor.
My Donald, I managed to say at last. Well, my mother always did want me to catch a lawyer.
Solicitor,
Eve corrected.
Limeys have solicitors, and very supercilious they are, too. You'll have to work up a good frown, Finn.
He had an impressive frown indeed as he handed his card across the maître d' desk, about 4 days later. By then he'd had some practice.
I am making inquiries on behalf of a lady, he murmured. A matter of some delicacy.
The maître d' appraised him in a glance. Finn Kilgore in his rumpled shirt and tousled hair wouldn't have gotten the time of day in Les Trois Cloches, one of Grasse's finest restaurants. But Donald McGowan, in his charcoal-gray suit and narrow striped tie, rated a subtle straightening in posture.
How may I be of assistance, monsieur?
It was the slow hour between lunch and dinner, when diners were few. Eve always timed our arrival carefully, so the staff had time to gossip, or answer questions.
My client, Mrs. Knight.
Finn glanced back to where Eve stood in a black silk dress and broad-brimmed hat, her hands hidden by kid gloves, leaning on my arm, looking frail as she dabbed her eyes with a black bordered handkerchief.
She emigrated to New York years ago, but much of her family remained in France, Finn explained. And with so many dead in the war.
The maître d' crossed himself.
So many. I have found death records for her father, her aunt, two uncles. But a cousin is still missing.
If you can traipse all over France looking for your missing cousin, then so can I, Eve had said when she told us where she got the idea. Who in Europe doesn't have a missing cousin or two these days?
We discovered he fled Limoges for Grasse in 44, just ahead of the Gestapo.
Finn lowered his voice, dropping a few vague hints about resistance activity and enemies in Vichy, painting a vision of Eve's childhood companion, brave patriot narrowly escaping arrest, now yearned for by Eve, lonely survivor of a massacred family. Will anyone fall for that? I'd asked back in the hyacinth field. It's very Hollywood.
They'll fall for it because it's Hollywood. After a war like this one, everyone wants a happy ending, even if it's not their own.
Sure enough, this maître d', like the ones before him, was nodding, clearly sympathetic.
René de Malassis,
Finn said, winding up.
But he may have taken a different name. The Milice were looking for him.
A trade of grimaces. Even 2 years after the war, everybody bristled at the mention of the Milice.
And this has made Mrs. Knight's inquiries very difficult. But we do have a photograph.
The photograph of René, folded and clipped so all his swastika-wearing dinner partners would not show, was pushed discreetly across the table. The maître d' studied it. Eve allowed her shoulders to shake, and I patted her back, looking worried.
Calm, maman, don't upset yourself.
My role here, to ramp up the sympathy factor. I chafed Eve's gloved hand between my own, heart thudding as the maître d' hesitated.
Non,
he said, shaking his head, and my heart thudded again more leadenly.
No, I'm afraid I don't recognize the gentleman.
I crossed Les Trois Cloches off the list as Finn slid a discreet banknote across the table, with a murmured, if you see the gentleman, do contact me. Only a few hundred more places to go.
Don't look dejected, Eve said once we were outside. I said this would take legwork and luck, didn't I? This is the part that isn't Hollywood. You don't just go looking for someone and have him pop up like a rabbit out of a magician's hat.
You're certain this is the best way to locate him? Finn asked, donning his fedora.
No more striding about hatless for him. Donald McGowan, solicitor, was a good deal more businesslike.
One of these places, Eve gave a whack to the crumpled list in her bag, we'll know him.
Her argument was simple. René Baudelon prized the finer things of life. Whatever else had changed, that wouldn't have. He'd still patronize the best clubs, drink at the best cafes, attend the best theaters. And he was the kind of patron the staff noticed, because he tipped and dressed well, and could talk wine with the sommelier and klimt with the museum guide. We had a relatively recent photograph. If we canvassed the best culture spots in Grasse, Eve argued, someone would recognize that face. Then we'd have a name. Standing on that sunny day among the flowers, I'd wondered, how long is this going to take?
If it were Paris, forever. But Grasse isn't enormous.
Finn had worried about something more sinister.
What if he finds out a woman is looking for him? A woman with mangled hands, about the age his little Marguerite would be now.
Eve glowered. I'm a professional, Finn. Give me some credit. You think I'm going to march all over Grasse with a horn announcing my presence? Hence Mrs. Knight and Mr. McGowan, and the gloves concealing Eve's hands.
One condition, Gardner, Finn replied. You leave that Luger in the hotel room. You think if I saw René Baudelon on the streets of Grasse, I'd walk up and put a bullet into his brain? I'm no dunderhead. I won't take the chance.
4 days now we'd been at it. We were barely unpacked in our hotel before Eve was gathering information, compiling lists. And as soon as Finn had his business cards and his suit, and Eve had a good pair of gloves and a dowager hat that hid her face, without looking like it was trying to hide her face, out we'd sallied. I was almost too nervous to speak the first time we sailed into a high-end cafe with our prepared story. Now, 6 restaurants, 3 museums, 1 theater, 5 clubs, and 4 days later, it was almost boring. Except for the moment of liquid anticipation every time a new concierge or waiter leaned over René's photograph, and I thought maybe, this time.
Welcome to real spy work, Eve said outside Les Trois Cloches,
transforming before my eyes as she straightened from her old lady hobble.
Mostly tedious, occasionally exhilarating.
Her eyes sparkled, and I thought how much better she looked than the day I met her. Then she could have been 60 or 70, harrowed and lined and pale. Now she'd shaken off the slump of grief and inactivity that made her seem old and fragile. And I was astounded at the change. Her face had healthy color again, even if there were still harsh lines graven about eyes and mouth. She moved with swift efficiency rather than a defensive hunch. Her graying hair had a gleam to it, like her sharp eyes. She looked her age again, 54, with plenty of vigor left. She hasn't had one of her screaming nightmares since we got here, I commented to Finn after dinner that night, watching Eve head upstairs. And she's not slamming back as much whiskey.
The cheese is good for her.
Finn finished his after-dinner coffee.
She's a hunter at heart. The past 30 years she's been standing still, dying slowly with nothing to pursue. Maybe it's not a bad thing if this hunt lasts a while.
Well, I said, I certainly wouldn't mind that. He gave me that invisible smile that turned my knees to water.
I'm pure done in from all this tramping about. You.
Exhausted. We should make it an early night. But there wasn't much sleeping being done in our little room, with its blue shutters and wide, soft bed. Neither Finn nor I objected when Eve's search expanded to a week, 10 days. The mornings were for the 3 of us, flaky croissant and cups of ink dark espresso, at a table so small our knees jammed together. Then the hunt, the repetition of our now seamless play, stopping at a shop for handmade shoes off the Place aux Arts. Then an atelier for expensive cologne. Strolling through the narrow, twisting streets of the Vieille Ville, headed for clubs and theaters that might recognize a favorite patron. And finally, during the sleepy hour before dinner,
visiting restaurants full of shaded lamps and heavy silver cutlery. Finally back to the hotel and supper, passing a bottle of Provençal Rosé over plates of heaped frites. Those were the days, and Finn and I were content to let Eve direct them, because the nights were ours. "Have I mentioned," I asked one night, my head against Finn's arm, "that you look absolutely jaw-dropping in a three-piece suit?"
"Aye, you have."
It seemed worth repeating. I leaned over to tip out the last of the wine we'd brought up to bed. I was completely naked, no longer even slightly self-conscious in front of him, as he lay with his hands clasped behind his head, admiring me. "When do we get the Lagonda back?"
"Maybe another week."
Upon learning we'd be in Grasse a while, Finn made arrangements to have that elusive leak repaired. He telephoned every other day to check on his precious car like an anxious mother. "You need a new car, Finn."
"You know what a new car costs these days. What with the wartime metal drive?"
"Here's to the Lagonda's health, then." I passed him the mug we were using for a wine glass. "I wouldn't mind driving around Grasse instead of walking everywhere. My feet hurt, and I was counting on a few more months before I get enormous enough for aching feet." As soon as we'd arrived in Grasse, my morning sickness had dropped away, and so had my perpetual draining tiredness. I didn't know if it was the flower-scented breezes, or all the lovemaking, or just that the Rosebud was into her fourth month now. But suddenly I felt marvelous, full of boundless energy and ready for anything. Even the endless walking all over Grasse. But I still missed the car. Finn drained the last of the rosé, then wriggled around so he was sitting with his back against the footboard. He started massaging my toes under the sheet, and I wriggled pleasurably. The night was warm. We had all the shutters open and the smell of jasmine and roses drifted in. The lamplight encircled the bed, turning it into a ship adrift on a dark sea. By agreement, we didn't talk about René here, or the war, or any of the terrible things that had happened because of either. The nighttime hours belonged to happier conversations.
"Wait until you're 8 months in," Finn predicted, massaging my arches. "That's when the feet really start to hurt."
"What would you know about 8 months in, Mr. Kilgore?"
"Watching all my friends' wives. I'm about the only one not hitched. First thing most of my mates in the 63rd did once they got home was knock up some girl and marry her. I'm a godfather at least three times over."
"I can just see you standing over a font with a screaming armful of lace."
"Screaming? Never. Babies like me. Go right to sleep the minute I pick them up."
A pause.
"I like bairns. Always wanted a few."
We let that hang in the air a moment before tiptoeing around it. "What else do you like?" I asked, giving him my other foot. "Besides Bentleys." Last night he'd read aloud out of his motoring magazine the entire mechanical rundown of the Bentley Mark VI, aping my American accent outrageously as I pummeled him with a pillow.
"A man with a Bentley has everything he needs, lass. Except maybe a good garage to keep her in fighting trim. The one that's got the Lagonda now, they're good."
I tickled his chest with my toes. "You could run a place like that, you know."
"Got to be good with more than cars to run a garage."
He made a rueful face.
"You know me. The bank book would end up under an oil can, and you'd never read the check stubs for engine grease. And soon the banks would own it all."
"Not if I were the one keeping the books." I didn't finish the thought even to myself, just released it gently and told him instead about the Provençal Café I remembered so well, how that long-ago day had made striped awnings and Edith Piaf and goat cheese sandwiches my idea of heaven on earth. Though an English breakfast should be featured, in the ideal café, that is.
"Well, I do a braw one-pan fry-up."
We both knew what we were doing here, during these lazy nighttime conversations. We were outlining a future, and tentatively, almost fearfully, starting to sketch each other into it, then backing away from the unspoken with half-smiles. Sometimes the night brought bad dreams for one of us, but nightmares were easier to bear when there were warm arms in the dark to burrow into. When grief came for either of us, it wound its way through the night and became part of the sweetness. "I haven't known you for long enough to be this crazy about you," I thought, watching Finn's profile in the soft light. "But I am." One afternoon, 2.5 weeks into our stay, Eve said over a post-lunch espresso,
"Maybe René isn't here."
Finn and I traded glances, both doubtless thinking of all the heads shaken no over the photograph since we'd arrived. Three restaurant managers and an expensive tailor had thought they recognized the face, but couldn't remember the name that went with it. Otherwise, nothing.
"Maybe I should give it up. Let Charlie here go back home to nip booties and have you..."
Eve nodded at Finn. "Take me back to the land of fish and chips. Can't say I'm ready to go home yet." I kept my voice light, but Finn squeezed my hand and I squeezed back.
"Let's give it another week or two," Finn said.
Eve nodded.
"But let's take the afternoon off. I want to amble over to the garage and check on the Lagonda. He's going to harangue those poor mechanics to death,"
Eve chuckled as he walked away. "Or apologize to the car for not visiting more often," I agreed. We sat for a while, finishing our espressos, and then Eve looked at me.
"I'm no good at afternoons off. Let's pick a few restaurants. I reckon the two of us can brace the waiters without our solicitor in tow."
I looked at her, gray eyes gleaming in her tanned face as she clapped her big hat over her brow at a rakish angle. "Maybe you should introduce me as your daughter this time. You're not so plausible as my old granny anymore."
"Pshaw.
I'm serious. It's this flowery air in Grasse. It's like the elixir of youth." As we strolled through the oldest part of the city, where the buildings arched overhead, leaning on each other like friendly shoulders, I realized I loved Grasse. All the other cities we'd passed through, Lille, Roubaix, Limoges, had been blurred for me by the search for Rose. But here in Grasse, we'd finally stopped to breathe, and the city was unfolding to me like the jasmine blossoms in the fields. "I never want to leave this place," I thought, before pulling myself back to the search at hand. Two unsuccessful restaurant stops later, Eve pulled out her map to search for a third. I munched a concoction of fried courgette flowers, to which the rosebud had become almost as addicted as bacon, eyeing a nearby shop window. The display was all children's clothes, sailor suits, ruffled skirts, and laid out across a display pram, a tiny lacy baby dress embroidered in rose vines. I looked at that dress and had an attack of utter lust. I could see the rosebud wearing it at her christening. I could feel her now. In what felt like a matter of days, I'd gone from utterly flat in front to just a little rounded. You couldn't see it through my clothes, but it was there, that tiny bump. Finn didn't say anything, but he kept running his fingertips over my abdomen at night, butterfly touches like kisses.
"Buy it," Eve said, noticing my stare. "That armload of lace you're drooling over. Just buy it."
"I doubt I can afford it." Wistfully, I swallowed my last fried flower. "I bet it costs more than all my second-hand clothes put together." Eve crammed her map into her handbag, marched into the shop, and emerged minutes later with a brown paper package that she tossed me unceremoniously.
"Maybe now you'll pick up the pace."
"You didn't have to.
I hate being thanked. March, Yank."
I marched.
"You're spending a lot lately, Eve."
The money from my pawned pearls had run out, and Eve was now covering all our expenses, though I'd sworn to repay her as soon as I could crack my bank account open in London.
"What have I got to spend it on? Whiskey, vengeance, and baby dresses?"
I grinned, hugging the package.
"Would you be her godmother?" "Keep saying her, and it'll come out a boy just to spite you."
"His godmother, then." I paused, suddenly serious, though I'd said it flippantly.
"Really, Eve, would you?" "I don't behave well in church."
"I'm counting on it."
"All right."
She gave me a rusty smile, then stalked on like a heron through deep water.
"If you insist..."
"I do insist," I said, and the words came out thick with emotion. The restaurant was just off the Place de Petit Puits, with its white-fronted cathedral. It was long past the lunch hour. Diners would be trickling in soon for early evening drinks. I blinked at the dimness inside after the dazzling sun, mentally shifting back to my role of devoted family attendant, just as Eve was already drooping against me, as though too frail to walk unsupported. I stepped to the maître d' and went into Finn's spiel, which I could have recited in my sleep. Eve dabbed at her eyes, and soon I was pushing the photograph across the table. My mind was on the baby dress. I wasn't really thinking of our quarry. And then I was, because the maitre d' nodded in recognition. That nod hit me like a hammer blow.
Bien sûr, mademoiselle. I know the gentleman well, one of our favored patrons, Monsieur René Gautier.
For an instant I froze. René Gautier. The name reverberated around my skull like a ricocheting bullet. René Gautier. Eve stepped up beside me. How she hung on to her quivery fragility, I had no idea. But she had won 4 medals for spying. I saw why as she quavered, without stammering or batting an eye.
Oh, monsieur, how happy you've made me. My René. It's been so many years since I've seen him. René Gautier. That's the name he's taken?
Yes, madame.
The maître d' smiled, clearly savoring his chance to be the bearer of good news. Eve was right. After a war, everyone wanted a happy ending.
He has a charming little villa outside Grasse, but he comes here frequently. For the rillettes de canard. We serve the finest rillettes on the Riviera, if I do say so myself.
I didn't care about the goddamn rillettes. I leaned in closer, pulse racketing. His villa. Would you have an address?
Just past the mimosa fields off the Rue des Papillons, mademoiselle. We sometimes deliver a crate of wine, et vous vrai, one can get nowhere else in Grasse.
Eve was already straightening her hat. Thank you, monsieur. You have made us very happy, I gabbled, reaching for Eve's arm. But the maître d' looked past us and beamed.
Ah, what luck. Here is monsieur now.
Chapter 38. Eve. As she turned to face her enemy, time folded in on itself. It was both 1915 and 1947. She was 22, bloodied and broken, and she was 54, shaking and still broken. René Bourdelon was a suave, dark-haired bon vivant, and he was this stiff-shouldered old man with silver hair and an exquisitely tailored suit. At that instant, while time crashed together, both versions were true. Then past and present merged with a click, and it was only 1947, a beautiful summer evening in Grasse, and an old spy stood separated from her old enemy by nothing more than a few feet of tiled floor. As Eve looked at him, tall and stalk-boned, the same silver-headed cane hooked over one arm, terror opened like a trapdoor in her stomach, and all her patched-together courage shattered in one long, silent shriek. He did not recognize her. He rotated his black Homburg in his hands, raising an eyebrow at the maître d''s eager expression.
I am expected, I see.
A shudder racked Eve at the sound of the inflectionless voice of her nightmares. Her hands ached inside her gloves as she gazed, numb with disbelief, at the man who had broken them. She had never imagined she might encounter him before she was ready. She thought she could manage their first meeting on her own terms, surprise him when she was well prepared. Instead, fate had surprised her, and she was not prepared at all. He had not changed. The hair gone silver, the lines at the forehead, those were just window dressing. The spider's fingers, the even voice, cheap soul of a torturer peeping out from behind the expensive suit of a sophisticate, that was all the same. Except the scar on his lip. Eve's mark, she realized, left when she'd bitten him in their last venomous kiss. The maître d' was chattering explanations, and dimly Eve felt Charlie touching her elbow, murmuring something she couldn't hear through the buzzing in her ears. She knew she should say something, do something, but she could only stand frozen. René's dark eyes returned to her face, and he stepped forward.
Mrs. Knight, I don't recognize the name, madame.
Eve had no idea how she managed it, but she stepped to meet him, holding out her hand. He took it, and the old revulsion swamped her at his familiar long-fingered grip. She wanted to fling his hand away and flee like a coward, keening her old terror and agony. Too late. He was here. So was she. And Evelyn Gardner was done running. She squeezed his hand hard and saw his face change as he felt the deformities covered by her glove. She leaned forward so only he could hear her voice. The words came low, calm, perfectly even. Perhaps you'll recognize the name Marguerite Lefrançois, René Bordelon. Or should I say, Evelyn Gardner. The restaurant was suddenly making a great fuss. They had a happy reunion under their roof. Waiters beamed and the maître d' offered the best table in the house. And in the middle of all the hubbub, Eve and René held each other in a gaze like an exchange of swords. Finally, the bastard dropped her hand and gestured toward the table the waiters were so cheerfully preparing.
Shall we?
Eve managed to incline her head. She turned, wondering how she was able to walk without stumbling. Charlie came to her side like a knight squire, her face white as she took Eve's elbow. That fierce little hand was wonderfully steadying. Eve, she murmured, eyes darting at the man behind them. What can I do? Keep out of the way, Eve managed to muster back. This dueling ground was no place for Charlie Sinclair. René would swat her as casually as he had swatted and maimed so many others in passing. Eve would claw him to pieces before she allowed him to hurt anyone else she cared for. Claw him to pieces? Her mind sneered. You can barely look him in the eye. But she shoved that aside along with her terror and sat down opposite him, an expanse of snowy linen stretching between them. Charlie perched on a chair at Eve's side, uncharacteristically mute. The waiters were well-trained, hovering out of earshot to give this happy reunion its privacy. René leaned back and steepled his fingertips. Eve had a sick flash, seeing those fingers curled around a blood-stained bust of Baudelaire, seeing them trace her naked breasts in bed.
Well, he said softly in French. Marguerite.
Her pulse nearly stopped, hearing that name from his lips. But her old coolness came back with her old identity, sweeping over her in a wave. Her blood beat slow and cold, and for the first time since she turned to find him standing in the restaurant entryway, she looked at the poisonous old man with some semblance of calm.
René Gautier, she replied. After Théophile Gautier, I presume. The poet to whom Baudelaire dedicated the Flowers of Evil. In Limoges you were de Malassis, after Baudelaire's publisher. So I see you still haven't found another poet.
René shrugged as casually as though this were any ordinary dinner conversation.
Why not stay with the best, once one has found it? A fancy way of saying you have a stagnant mind.
A waiter gushed up and presented a bottle of champagne.
Since it is a reunion worthy of celebration, monsieur.
It is at that, René murmured. Why not?
I could use a drink, Eve agreed. A whiskey the size of a bucket would have been better, but she'd take champagne. She knotted her hands into fists in her lap, realizing, as the champagne cork popped and René twitched, that he was not as cool inside as he pretended. Good. In unison they reached for their glasses as the waiter retreated. No one suggested a toast.
So many lines on that face, he said. What have you been doing with yourself all these years?
Living hard. I don't need to ask what you've been doing. Pretty much what you were doing the last time we met. Living well, aiding Germans, getting your countrymen shot.
Though now you're not opposed to doing the shooting yourself. Lost your squeamishness in your old age.
It's thanks to you that I lost my squeamishness, pet.
The word ran over her skin like a rat. I was never your pet.
Does Judas suit you better?
That hit hard, but Eve managed, barely, not to flinch. About as well as dupe suits you. He gave a tight smile. As Eve watched him lounging in his expensive suit, his long nose appreciating the fizz of his perfectly chilled champagne, fury began to build. So many had died. Lily in her squalid prison. Charlie's cousin and her baby in a hail of bullets. A young sous-chef with a pocket full of stolen silver. And this man had spent those years doing what? Drinking champagne and sleeping without nightmares? Eve's nightmares had not begun until after Siegburg. In her prison cell, shivering in an agony of cold on an unwashed pallet, there were no dreams. But afterward, there were horror images of the green-walled study, the evil-eyed lilies, the descending bust. The room, never the man. Dreaming of that room where he'd broken her had given the lines around her eyes that he studied so contemptuously. He looked like he'd spent the last 30 years sleeping very well. Eve caught a glimpse of Charlie's face, pale and immobile, when she was usually so animated, and wondered if the Yank was thinking the same thing. She remembered Charlie saying that she'd never faced evil as Eve had. You are facing it now. Renee took another sip, made a small sound of appreciation, and patted his lips with a napkin.
I confess I'm surprised to see you, Marguerite. May I call you Marguerite? I never really managed to think of you any other way.
I'm surprised you thought of me at all. You never were one to look back at the wreckage in your wake.
Well, you were unique. I thought you might turn up in Limoges looking for me, after the First War.
If not for Cameron's lie. You covered your tracks rather well when you left Lille for Limoges.
New identification papers aren't difficult to manage when one already has black market connections.
A wave of his hand.
You might still have phoned me once they let you out of Zeigburg. I did keep an eye out for news of your release. Why such a delay tracking me down?
Does it matter? Eve slugged half a champagne in a single swallow. She was finding her words faster, the old back-and-forth rhythm she used to play so well against Renée in their conversations.
I'm here now. To shoot me between the eyes. I believe you'd have done that in the doorway if you had a weapon.
May goddamn Finn Kilgore to hell, Eve thought. If not for him, she'd have been carrying her Luger.
If that broken mess she call a hand can still fire pistols, that is.
René summoned a waiter with a lifted finger.
The Riz de Canard. I find myself hungry. Certainly, monsieur. And for madame.
No, thank you.
Your stammer's improved,
René said once the waiter retreated.
Does it go away when you're afraid?
When I'm angry. Eve smiled. When you get angry, you get a tiny tick at the corner of your eye. I can see it now.
I think you're the only woman who has ever made me lose my temper, Marguerite.
Small victories. Do you still have that bust of Baudelaire?
I treasure it. At night sometimes I hear the sound of your fingers breaking, and I go to sleep with a smile.
A flash of the green-walled study, the smell of blood and fear, but Eve shoved it aside. When I need to sleep, I think of your face the moment you realized you were being fucked by a spy. He never blinked, but something behind his eyes tightened. Eve's scalp shrank, but she smiled again, bolting the rest of her champagne and pouring more. I still know how to get to you, you old bastard.
I suppose you want revenge,
René said abruptly.
Revenge is the consolation prize of the losing side.
My side won.
But you lost. So how do you intend to get your revenge, Marguerite? I don't believe you have the nerve for murder. That broken, piss-stained little thing I last saw sobbing her heart out in my Aubusson couldn't so much as lift her head, much less a pistol.
Eve flinched deep in her bones. She had been that broken, piss-stained little thing for more than 30 years in many ways. Until a knock on her door one damp London night, barely a month ago. Until the audible click in the front of the restaurant today, where past and present united. Until now. She would not be that broken, piss-stained little thing again. Ever. Renée was still talking.
Perhaps you think you can disgrace me, turn me as a profiteer. I'm a respected man in Grasse, with powerful friends. You're a half-mad crone, gone crazed from grief. Who do you think will be believed?
You're the man who informed against Orador Soglan. Charlie's voice dropped into the conversation like a chunk of ice. Eve looked at her, startled. Don't speak. Don't draw his notice. But Charlie went on, eyes burning like coals. You're responsible for the massacre of 600 souls. I don't care how many powerful friends you have, you old bastard. France will not forgive that. René's eyes went over Charlie's face, lingering, but he still spoke to Eve.
Who's this little thing then, Marguerite? Not a daughter or granddaughter, I think. That shriveled old cunt of yours surely never produced anything this pretty.
Eve didn't respond. She looked at Charlie instead, feeling the squeeze of an unfamiliar emotion inside. Perhaps love.
Call her Mercury, Renée. The winged messenger who came knocking at my door. She's the reason I'm sitting here. She's the reason you won't get away this time. She's your downfall.
Eve raised her champagne in salute.
Meet Charlotte Sinclair.
His brow creased.
I don't know the name.
You know my cousins. Charlie's fingers tightened so hard around her champagne flute, Eve was surprised it didn't shatter. Rose Fournier, also going by the name of Hélène Joubert. She was blonde and lovely, and she worked for you in Limoges. And you got her killed, you son of a bitch. You gave her name to the milice because you were afraid she might be spying on you. And she died with nearly every other soul in Oradour-sur-Glane. The waiter chose that moment to arrive with the rillettes de canard. René continued to look at Charlie thoughtfully as he unfolded his napkin, smeared a toast point with duck fat pâté, and consumed it with another small sound of appreciation.
I remember her,
he said at last when the waiter glided away.
The little bitch who liked to eavesdrop. I take a dim view of nosy waitresses.
A glance at Eve.
Never let it be said I don't learn from the past.
Why didn't you just fire her? The words rasped as if they were scraping out of Charlie's throat. Why did you turn her in?
Just to be safe. And to be blunt, because it pleased me. I have a great antipathy now for spying women.
A shrug.
But I hope you aren't blaming me for the death of the entire village. That would be astoundingly poor logic. I am hardly at fault for some German general choosing to so thoroughly exceed protocol.
I blame you for her death, Charlie whispered. You didn't know if she was resistance or not, and you still reported her. She could have been innocent, and you didn't care. You bastard.
Quiet, child. The adults are speaking.
René reached for another toast point.
More champagne, Marguerite.
I believe we're done here. Eve drained her flute and rose. Come along, Charlie. The girl froze. Eve could see her trembling, knew the kind of rage that gripped her, how she wanted to hurl herself across the table and saw that old throat open with a butter knife. Eve understood that feeling very well. Not yet, Yank. Not just yet.
Charlie!
Eve's voice cracked like a whip. The girl rose, visibly shaking. She looked at René, calmly sitting there with duck fat glistening on his lips, and she whispered, "We're not done yet."
"Yes, we are."
He talked past her to Eve.
"If I see you again, you rattled bitch, or here you are trying to find my home or blacken my reputation, I will have you arrested for harassment. I'll consign you to oblivion and go back to a life where I never have to think of you."
You think of me constantly, Eve said. The thought of me gnaws at you every day, because I'm walking proof you never were as clever as you thought you were. His eyes flared.
You're a turncoat who betrayed her own, thanks to a spoonful of opium.
But I still fooled you blind, and that's been eating you alive for 30 years. The mask fell at last, and Eve saw raw fury. His eyes burned as though he could fell her dead on the spot, and she gave a slow, contemptuous smile. They did not move, just exchanged their dueling gazes in venomous stillness, as waiters exchanged puzzled looks. This was clearly not the happy reunion they had thought to see.
Au revoir.
Eve reached over to his plate, picked up a toast point, ate it slowly. I must lie down where all the ladders start. In the foul rag and bone shop of the heart.
That's not Baudelaire, he said.
Yeats. I told you to find another poet. Eve picked up her hat. In that foul rag and bone shop you call a heart, René, take the time to admit you are afraid, because your fleur du mal has come back. She took Charlie's arm in a grip like steel and turned for the door.
Sleep on that.
Chapter 39. Charlie. I stopped outside the restaurant and stood gulping for air, as though I'd just stumbled out of a poison cloud. I could still hear that flat, metallic voice telling me he'd reported Rose to her death, just to be safe. That it had pleased him. Eve had described him so often, the unwavering eyes, the long fingers, the elegant surface, but she had not done him justice. That hadn't been a man sitting across the table from me. It had been a human viper. I wanted to be sick, but Eve moved past me, heading down the street nearly at a run, and I forced myself into motion. Eve, we don't have to run. Dashing to catch up. He's not coming after you.
No.
Eve never stopped.
I'm going after him.
For an instant, my heart howled agreement. I thought of that man, and I didn't feel any of the queasiness I'd experienced when I first realized Eve's revenge might be murderous. Half a glass of champagne in René Baudelon's company would be enough to convince anyone that sometimes even old men deserve to die. But common sense struggled through the red haze of fury, and my heart lurched.
Eve, wait! You can't risk it, you... Hurry up!
She kept striding, blazing-eyed, through the twisting streets. A tall Frenchman took one look at her expression and stepped out of her way. My mind raced, pulled in two directions. Stop her, common sense argued, even as rage screamed, why? Turning the last corner, I saw the Lagonda in front of our hotel, blue and gleaming. I sagged in relief. I needed Finn, his calm, his quiet logic. And if all else failed, his implacable arms keeping Eve from charging into disaster. But he wasn't beside his beloved car, and inside the desk clerk passed me a note covered in his black, slanting scrawl. He went out to have drinks with the garage mechanic, I said, replying to Eve's look of brusque inquiry. They're offering him a job. Something about engine restoration.
Good.
Eve took the stairs two at a time. I crammed a note in my pocket and followed. The desk clerk called after me.
Madame, a telegram for you from Roubaix.
I'll come back for it, I flung over my shoulder. By the time I burst into Eve's room, she already had the Luger out of the bedside drawer. The sight of it stopped me dead.
Shit,
I said for the first time in my life. Eve gave a grim smile as she peeled off her gloves.
You cannot possibly be surprised.
I pressed my fingers against my pounding temples. Fury was definitely giving way to fear.
You'll go to his house and kill him then? Just wait till he comes home from slurping up Riette? Walk up to his door and put 7 shots into his skull?
Yes.
She pushed the first bullet home.
A charming little villa, the waiter said. Just past the mimosa fields off the Rue des Papillons. Shouldn't be hard to find.
I folded my arms across my chest. Put that pistol down and listen to me. Whether you succeed or fail, you'll go to prison. Don't you understand that?
I don't care.
I do. I seized her by the arm. I want my daughter to have a godmother. She slid the last bullet into place.
And I want to see that man dead.
Part of me agreed, but his life wasn't worth trading for Eve's future. He'd already eaten too much of her past. And I wasn't going to risk ruining my own future, just as it was starting to be patched together, by assisting in a murder.
Eve, stop and think.
I have.
Eve checked the Luger's barrel.
If I kill René at his home, there shouldn't be any witnesses. He hasn't got a wedding ring, so there's no wife or children to get in the way. I intend to leave his rotten body on the floor and walk out free as a bird.
The restaurant knows you were looking for him, asking where he lived. Not just the restaurant today, either. We've been making inquiries all over Grasse for weeks. Maybe logic would reach her. I scrambled to marshal my arguments.
If he turns up dead now, the police might look for us, but how? We all gave false names. To the hotel here and everyone else. Besides, I don't intend to stay in Grasse long enough for people to come looking for me.
And how are you getting out of Grasse, with Finn not here to drive? How are you even getting to René's house first?
Cab, if necessary.
She sounded so calm, as though she were planning tea. In the restaurant, I'd sensed the fear behind the ice, seen her hands trembling in her lap under the table. Now she soared in some place far above fear, remote and relentless as a gliding eagle. Tossing the pistol into her satchel, Eve kicked out of the pumps she was wearing as respectable Mrs. Knight and thrust her feet into her old sandals.
Come help me kill him if you like. You have a right to want him dead too.
No, I won't help you murder that man.
You don't think he deserves to die?
He does, but I want something worse than death for him. I want to see him exposed, humiliated, imprisoned. I want him held up to the world so they can see what he really is. That will kill him slowly, Eve. The worst punishment in the world for a man as proud as that. I took a deep breath, willing her to hear me. Let's go to the police. We have the photograph of him surrounded by Nazis. We have your testimony. We can call on the women in Limoges who saw him shoot that sous chef in cold blood. René Baudelot might have powerful friends, but so do you. You're a war heroine. People will believe you. So turn him in and make his life a living hell. For me, that would be good enough, to see that man in a cell, knowing he'd been put there by Eve and me, suffering the public abuse of de Gaulle's France that held collaborators and profiteers in as much contempt as vermin. No more chilled champagne and rillettes. Just humiliation, and the kind of gray prison days Eve had suffered.
He'll never sit in a cell, Yank.
Eve's voice was implacable.
René Baudelon has made a career of avoiding consequences. If we accuse a respected local man with money and powerful friends, it will take time to prove those accusations. He'll use that time to wrap it because he always runs. He's outrun the bad decisions of two wars, and he'll run now because he knows I won't stop coming for him. If I rely on an arrest warrant, he'll be gone before it comes to his door, and he'll resettle somewhere I'll never find him.
She picked up the satchel with her Luger.
So I'll rely on a bullet.
I wanted to throttle her. Don't you see how many ways that could go wrong? He could easily shoot you, or call the police and see you carried off in handcuffs.
I'll take the risk.
She looked down at me as I stepped between her and the door.
Out of my way, Charlie Sinclair.
I looked her right in the eye.
No.
She started toward me. I didn't try to push her back. I wrapped my arms around her and held fast. Are you going to drag me down the stairs, screaming every step of the way? I said, and realized I was near tears.
I won't let go, Eve. I won't.
I'd lost my brother. I'd lost Rose. I wasn't losing anyone else I loved. Eve went stiff in my arms as though she was about to fight. But then she sagged. I heard the glottal sound of a sob tearing loose from her throat, and then the satchel slid to the floor. We stood there a long time as Eve wept, as the sky and the open window behind her turned purple with twilight. I just held her, relief shuddering inside my chest. She wouldn't say anything at all when the tears dried up. She let me persuade her to lie down, took the whiskey I poured, shivering now and then under the blanket I laid over her. I sat by the bed nibbling my thumbnail, wishing silently for Finn. He knew better than I how to take care of her in these moods. I heard her breathing deepen and tiptoed downstairs to the hotel front desk. But they had no idea where Finn had gone with his mechanic friend.
Your telegram, madame, the clerk reminded me. From Roubaix.
I'd completely forgotten. It had to be from Violette. My heart was suddenly pounding for entirely new reasons as I snatched the paper. The words were terse, even for a telegram. Lie confirmed. A Mademoiselle Tellier responsible. Golden choirs erupted in my head. I felt 10 feet tall. I'd been right in my suspicions. I'd been right. For once, I had it in my hands, the power to fix what was broken. This was what Eve needed. I sprinted back to her room, heart pounding. Eve, look! The door gaped open. The bed stood empty. The satchel with the Luger was gone. I hadn't even been gone 5 minutes. She must have been up and moving the minute I tiptoed out, as cool and collected as she'd been shaking and crying just moments before. Fear roared through me again, hammering at my temples like spikes of ice. I ran to the open window, searching the street below, but I saw no tall, gaunt figure. You sneaky bitch. I thought in a wave of fury. At her for tricking me, and at myself for being tricked. I knew where she was going. I couldn't telephone the police,